Scratch an author and you'll find someone who has a problem with a publisher. At least, that was a hard and fast rule of the book world for decades, if not generations. In 2014, though, the rules have changed. Welcome to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series. My name is Christopher Keneally for Beyond the Book. Self-publishing, at least in its digital form, no longer carries a stigma. For Amanda Hocking and Hugh Howey, among others, self-publishing has paved a path to profit and celebrity. But a smoldering debate on just how much authors stand to gain from self-publishing has flared up this week and brought the subject much-needed scrutiny. Joining me from New York City is Andrew Albany, senior writer of Publishers Weekly. And Andrew, welcome back to Beyond the Book.
Greetings, Chris.
Well, we chat with you every week, and sometimes we do it at conferences, and we've talked about self-publishing in a couple of venues like that. Let's get right to the heart of the matter. There is this debate brewing just about how much indie authors can and do earn from their writing, and it was sparked by a blog post from Hugh Howey, who seemed to have some controversial, at least to some people, controversial views on the subject. So in response to that, PW, coming out on Monday, has a piece from another player in the self-publishing world, another man familiar to Beyond the Book listeners, Smashwords' Mark Coca. So tell us what his take, what Mark's take is on the current conversation, and then we look forward to hearing about your thoughts.
Yeah, you know, it's a really great piece in Monday's issue from Mark Coker. And I think it really puts the whole conversation that was kicked up by Hugh Howey's recent blog posts into its proper perspective. And I should mention that it's going to be in print on Monday in PW, but there's a longer version that Mark had written that's up in its entirety on the PW website now. So I would encourage our listeners to give it a read and to weigh in on the comments. We're interested in their experiences and their opinions on the subject. So, you know, you mentioned the Howey blog post, so a little background for those who might not be fully engaged with the conversation thus far. Basically, author Hugh Howey, who's a very successful independently published author, operates a website called Author Earnings, which tries to sort of glean some numbers and data on the size and the strength of the growing independent self-publishing movement. And last week, as Mark Coker wrote, some critics in the industry, or around the industry, I should say, accused Howey of horrible crimes against statistics. Meanwhile, indie authors and indie sympathizers sort of hailed Howey's numbers as evidence that, you know, authors no longer need publishers. You know, but, you know, the critics on both sides of Howey's data, I think, are sort of missing the point. At least Coker argues this. You know, the thrust of Howey's conclusions, I think, is that indie authors are taking the ebook market share from traditional publishers. And what matters here is that that trend exists. And there are strong social, cultural, and economic forces at work here that are going to continue to propel that trend to take ebook market share away from the major publishers. So sort of arguing over the data that Howey presents is sort of missing the forest for the trees here. You know, the real point that we should be talking about is how the internet has changed the balance of power when it comes to independent and self-publishing.
Well, indeed, the balance of power, that really is the nub of the matter. And we started discussing this trend a few years ago, and indeed you and I were together in Miami back in 2012 for a book fair panel that had Mark Coker on it, and that conversation has evolved in 2 years. And in what direction do you see things going?
Well, you know, I remember that panel well. You know, I wrote a feature on it, and, you know, I would urge listeners to go to, they could Google Publishers Weekly Select and Miami Advice, which was my clever title for the piece, and they can
very
read,
clever title indeed.
And they can read what, you know, advice the panelists had on the self-publishing market back then and compare it with this discussion now. You know, and I can also remember that panel in Miami in 2012 was packed. There were a lot of people who were interested in self-publishing there. So, you know, a few things jump out at me that are holding true back, you know, from 2012 till now. The stigma that used to hang around self-publishing is clearly evaporating. You know, it was evaporating in 2012. It's really, really getting thin now. You know, once self-publishing was the domain of the vanity press, you know, that conjures up images of, you know, a writer with a garage full of crappy print books or selling them out of the trunks of their cars or something. But with the internet and social media, both the marketing and distribution of books has been democratized. You know, the big publishers became big because they controlled access to the retail market. Well, that's no longer true. Pretty much anyone can now get access to readers in the age of the ebook. And whether you doubt Hugh Howey's data and how much of that market they now have, or whether you embrace those numbers, I don't think anyone can reasonably dispute the fact that, you know, it is changing, that things are moving in the direction of independent authors publishing online. Now, this is not to say that publishers don't add value. And I think Mark Coker's point in his piece on Monday is that, you know, the value proposition the publishers offer is going to have to be different. And for the major publishers, you know, arguing over, or for anybody arguing over statistics at this point is not really the way to look at things. So the trend is so clear, and it really portends sort of a seismic shift on how publishers are going to have to woo authors in the future. You know, look at it this way. Any author can hire an editor, a publicist, a designer. They can get their book to market fast now. They can distribute to every major e-retailer on their own, and they can keep total creative freedom, total control over their own production, pricing, and promotion, and get greater royalties. So, you know, these are the kinds of things that publishers are going to really need to focus on the future. You know, it can't rely on the role of being gatekeeper anymore, because there's no fence anymore. So I think Coker rightly points out that to date that, you know, publishers haven't really felt the pain of major author defections, like a Stephen King, for example, and that's been predicted to happen for some time now. But, you know, as digital gains balance with print, as more people get used to reading ebooks, and, you know, the book market sort of finds its equilibrium, this is going to happen. You know, so, you know, people can quibble with the stats about how quickly self-published, you know, writing is growing and independent publishing is growing. And a big part of that problem is that Amazon and companies like that don't provide us their stats. You know, but I think really we should not lose focus at this stage on the changes that self-publishing, by any name you want to call it, whether it's independent publishing or whatever, is surely going to bring to the publishing market overall.
Well, you know, Andrew, as you point out, the numbers are hard to get at, but that's really not the point or beside the point. And there is a number you know very well, which is 999. And you're an author of an independently published book yourself, the Battle of 999, on the recent Apple price-fixing litigation. So tell us your personal perspective. How does this all sort of look to an author?
Well, I'm so glad you asked. Is my ebook doing any? Is it doing well? It certainly is. Am I getting rich? No, I'm really not. I would love to say that I am, but you know, remember, my ebook is a short one, and it's only $1.99. And it's available at every major retailer, I should mention. But, you know, but here's my takeaways with my experience. You know, first, back at your Miami panel in 2012, Matt Kavnar from Vook said something that I think has proven to be true in my case. And that's that publishing a book is a lot of work. And the ones who will self-publish the best and succeed the best are the ones who have an organizational apparatus behind them. Now, when he said that, he was speaking of Newsweek, Daily Beast, who had just published a book by David Frum, I believe, on why Mitt Romney lost the 2012 election. And this was just days after the 2012 election was over. But it's also true for me too, because Publishers Weekly was my book publisher. And, you know, Vook did the ebook for me. And Vook, of course, is Matt Kavnar's company. You know, and without all that apparatus behind me, somebody to help me work on the editing and, you know, to handle the production and all of that, I'm not sure that I could have pulled this ebook off. I'd also like to point out that, you know, I worked with Cory Doctorow going back in 2009 through 2012 on a series called With a Little Help, in which he documented his own self-publishing experience, and he did share all of his numbers. Now, Cory is a strong supporter of independent publishing and self-publishing, but he also works with a big six publisher, and he's a best-selling author. You know, so what's his takeaway, and how does it all work for him? Well, for him, the major publisher adds value. And the conclusion that I think overarchingly that he came to with his experience is that it's one thing to be a writer and it's another thing to be a publisher. And I know very few people who have the time and energy to do both very well. So even as Mark Coker suggests in his piece on Monday, I think this is the future for publishers, that, you know, they sort of have to reimagine their business as a service. You know, writers want to write. They don't want to be spending all their time publishing. And that's where publishers can really pitch in and, you know, woo publishers to their organizations. So we'll see.
Well, we will see. And, you know, you talk about reimagining the business. I wonder whether Publishers Weekly has to reimagine itself and become the Publishers and Authors Weekly.
I think that's already begun.
I think it has, and there really is a story there as well. Well, we brought up the Apple litigation, and it seems like we always get to it at the end of each one of these episodes with Andrew Albanese. So there is a development this week. Apple is getting a referee of sorts. What's happening there?
Yeah, you know, this is probably going to be going on for some time now. I don't expect all of the wrangling between Apple and its DOJ overlords with the monitor to end soon. But this week, Judge Koh appointed a magistrate to oversee the resolution of any disputes that arise in connection with Apple's external monitor. Now, to me, this is what I call a babysitter provision. Under Koh's final order, the parties were supposed to be able to work out their differences amongst themselves. Remember, it's a very narrow final order in regards to the external monitor, and then for the tough issues, they could bring them to court. But that, of course, is not what happened. You know, as the U.S. attorneys tell it, Apple was trumping up its concerns, then it refused to deal with U.S. attorneys on any resolution of these concerns, either as a stall or as a bid to have the monitor provision expunged. Well, we know now that that failed at the Second Circuit, and now failing with the decision that Apple must comply with the monitor, the judge has installed a referee of sorts. And this magistrate, who will now oversee all disputes between Apple and the external monitor. And basically, in a nutshell, what this magistrate is going to do is make sure that Apple's complaints have merit and that they're at least working on any real concerns to resolve them in the fashion that the judge laid out. But what this really means is that, you sort of reap what you sow. And I think Apple kind of ran afoul of Judge Koh, and now she's going to ride a little more herd on them. And I can't imagine that this is a terribly good thing for Apple as it goes into its damages trial, but who knows?
Well, indeed. And, I think the impression I have, and you are in the courtroom all the time, I haven't been there, is this this judge is a tough customer.
She is a tough customer, but I'll tell you, she has been remarkably patient with Apple. Apple has is fighting tooth and nail every step of the way on this, and she hears them out. You know, at one point, I really expected that she was going to lose her cool in the courtroom when some of these things were just dragging on incessantly. But she has played this by the book and has given everybody their fair say. And I'm a little surprised at her temperance thus far, that she's been able to sort of keep her cool with some of the things that have gone on. But she has been tough, and she has had the will to make sure that her order is going to be followed. And we'll see how that translates when it comes time for the damages trial in May.
Well, indeed. And it is a case that we are watching closely here with you, Andrew Albanese, on Beyond the Book. And we appreciate your contribution every Friday. Andrew Albanese, senior writer of Publishers Weekly, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Chris. My pleasure, as always.
Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center, a global rights broker for the world's most sought-after materials, including millions of books and ebooks, journals, newspapers, magazines, and blogs, as well as images, movies, and television shows. You can follow Beyond the Book on Twitter, find Beyond the Book on Facebook, and subscribe to the free podcast series on iTunes or at beyondthebook.com. Our engineer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. My name is Christopher Keneally. For all of us at Copyright Clearance Center, thanks for listening to Beyond the Book.